Hi, good afternoon. This is Richie.
This is Mark Hahn with APS.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Hey, great. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Good afternoon. This is Gomathi from DNVGL.
Hi, Gomathi. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Richie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Gomathi, you're joined by Mark Hahn at APS so far.
Hi, Mark. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good afternoon.
Gomathi, we received some materials from Ivan Aguilar earlier today, and he should be joining us as well shortly.
Got it, yes. Jenna is in transit, and she won't be joining, and I'm not sure if Michelle will be, so it might be me from DNVGL.
Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Ivan Aguilar and Scott Bordenkircher from Arizona Public Service.
Ivan, where are you guys?
Scott's office.
All right, I'll come in and I'll just finish from my office. I'm in my office right now.
Oh, get in here.
Come on over.
we've got time. You can head over there. We're good.
Okay, I'll be right there.
All right.
Ivan and Scott, this is Richie from Gridwise Alliance. Thank you for being here. We also have Gomathi Sadhasvarian from DNVGL, who will most likely be the only person from DNVGL joining us. So I think once Mark makes it over there, I think we could get started.
Good afternoon, Ivan and Scott.
Good afternoon. And I apologize. I missed some of those names while we wait for Mark. Can we please repeat those names really quick?
So this is Gomathi. Sorry, go ahead, Richie.
Scott, just Gomathi said Hassavin is the only line, or the only person on the line from our team besides myself today.
How do you spell that name? Sorry?
It's G like green, O like orange, M like Mary, A like Andrew, T like Tom, H like Harry, I like Iris, Gomathi, sounds
okay.
Like, yeah, sounds like Timothy, so yeah.
Thank you so much for that.
Of course. And Richie, yes, I got the documents you'd sent on, and I felt we were cramming for an exam given that it just came in at 10:30, so... as we go along, I have had a chance to scan it really quick because I had another call, but appreciate your sharing this information. And, it might take us a minute or two to, if you're making a reference to anything specific in those documents to navigate there, but I think we should be good.
I agree. Guys, just as Mark makes it over there.
He's here now, by the way. Sorry, I just didn't know how to interrupt Gomathi.
No worries.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate you guys joining us today to talk about the Grid Modernization Index and really to talk about your work. But before we get started, I just wanted to talk about just a few logistical items. I did, before you all joined here, I set a recording for this line. So this conversation is recorded. It's just for our purposes of the call. It will only be circulated throughout this writing team, which is the DNVGL team that Gomathi is on, as well as two board members on the Gridwise Alliance, which is Stephen Callahan from GridBright and Ronnie Sandoval, who is now working as a consultant under ROS Energy Strategies. So once we're done with this call, we're going to keep it recorded for just a little bit to make sure we get everything right, and then it will be deleted. But I just want to make sure that that was clear. Is there any concerns about that?
I don't have any, but thank you for letting us know. Okay, you guys good?
Great.
Yep, we're good.
All right, perfect. So we've had a couple conversations, and Gomathi, just to bring you up to speed as well, I spoke with Scott and Ivan about three months ago. It was at the end of August, and it was as we were getting started developing the kind of content around the Grid Modernization Index. We had a kind of high-level conversation about how could we feature our members and APS specifically. And so this is kind of a follow-up to that conversation to get a little more detail about some of the work that you guys are doing. And so, Mark, just so you're also brought up to speed as well, and just so this is really for everyone, GMI is a little bit different this year than in past years. And so we've not asked you guys to submit any specific quantitative data. We are not using the portal this year specifically for a re-ranking. We will not be re-scoring or re-ranking any of the states in this year's edition. What we're doing is taking a deeper dive in the trends that we found in last year's GMI 2018, as well as other activities that have happened throughout the country in 2019. And so those trends were really at a high level, transportation electrification and preparing for EVs, enabling resiliency, and really what does it mean to improve the grid for resiliency. And then we called something activating energy transformations. It's really preparing and integrating DERs. And so those three trends is what we're going to focus on in GMI. And what we're trying to do this year is focus on our members. I think we can tell the story better by getting more information and really insights from our utilities and our members that help explain how the pace of change is happening around the country. So really what we're doing today is we realize that resiliency and that, you know, integrating renewables is a huge deal across the country and in Arizona and APS. We've done a lot of research this year and worked with some partners to focus on what are some of the policies that might be changing that and what are some of the market drivers. But what we want to talk about here is how is that affecting you guys and how is that affecting your grid and your operations, and what are you guys doing about it? And so that's really kind of the goal of this conversation, and we'll get through as much as we can. And I probably won't talk this much anymore. But really it's to try to ask some questions about your strategies and what you guys are seeing as far as reactions to some of these trends and how you're either taking the lead or reacting to them in some cases. And so that's really the purpose of today. But, you know, before I go or before I give this to Gomathi to kind of lead us through this list of questions, are there any questions from you guys just off the top of the purpose here or GMI in general or this call?
Not for me. How about you, Mark? We're good.
Okay. Does that kind of set the stage pretty good of what we're doing here today?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, great. And so, Gomathi, I'll hand this off to you, but just before I do, we've talked to about maybe more than a half a dozen other utilities. No one in the Southwest yet. We'll be talking to a utility or two in the Northwest, but you know, it's really been eye-opening for us. We've even talked about, you know, things that are not in these questions. So really what we're trying to do is have a nice conversation here about, you know, what's important to APS, and, you know, the purpose of GMI is to help tell the stories to either Arizona or other states that can learn about, you know, what's important as we start to tackle some of these challenges facing the grid. So really what we're trying to do is better tell your story. And so that's our goal today. So with that, Gomathi, I'll kind of give it to you and just let us kind of go through the questions. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. Thank you, Richie. So, you know, I thought it'd be helpful for us as we go through this, if you could provide a brief introduction of your roles within. That way I'm able to get what perspectives you're coming from, you know, where you sit in the organization. I can just begin with a quick line about what I do. I'm at DNVGL. I'm our customer decision sciences lead, trained as a statistician, work as a researcher and analytics person, and I'm concerned with understanding customer decisions especially related to adoption of emerging technologies and what impact it has on the grid. So, yeah, if Ivan, Scott, and Mark, I could invite you to say a little bit about your purview at APS, and then we can get started with our interview.
Okay. Sounds good, Gomathi. So I'll go first. So Ivan Aguilar, I am the manager of the Advanced Grid Technologies Department, which is our internal phrase for smart grid development. The main focus of my team is year over year deploying reliability and power quality technologies, which ties back to Trend 2 and enabling grid flexibility and resiliency. When this department first started, we were very focused on the actual endpoints out on the field or in the field and on the power lines. So in other words, we were looking at which apparatuses should we invest some money in, as well as some new control equipment to pair them with to automate a few things. And over the past several years, we have evolved that focus from being what I just described to what we now call the full end-to-end implementation and big picture perspective, which consists of three major areas. The first major area consists of our control systems. So the two big ones are going to be our transmission EMS system, and then the other one is our relatively new distribution ADMS, Advanced Distribution Management System. And the next big area adjacent to that is our field area network, which we are in the middle of preparing to roll out in terms of a newer communication technology in comparison to what we have deployed in the past to make things operate more as an integrated energy network, which I'll explain perhaps a little bit later. And then last but not least, it's those endpoints that I just described in the beginning, such as capacitor banks and switches with controller pairings and other apparatuses. So we are focused on the interoperability between the eventual ADMS algorithms that we intend to turn on, such as FLISR and VVO, as well as the future integration of a DERM system in collaboration with Mark's team. And he'll speak to that because that's what his team is in charge of, researching and deploying for APS. And to kind of put it all back into that big picture perspective, we're trying to anticipate what the next 10 to 15 years looks like in terms of grid behavior. Which tied back to that grid flexibility and resiliency theme, including the integration of DERs, which plays into a DERM and eventually a transportation electrification strategy, et cetera. But that's the high level right there.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So my team is the technology assessment team, so we dabble in a little bit of everything. We run our technology evaluation programs. So anybody who has any new, let's just call them, intelligent devices that they want to use in the system at all, my team will do the evaluation, business case, assessment of the technology, see if it is solving the problem we want it to solve. We are also doing the battery controls integration of our, basically 900 megawatts of new energy storage that's going in. My team will do the integration for the controls on that. My team is also doing the DERMS evaluation and selection, working with our business partner. We're basically shepherding everybody along to figure out what a DERMS is, what our solution needs to be, and then go out for RFP to select the actual DER part of the DERMS solution and any other tools that need to be underneath that big DERMS umbrella. We are working, as Ivan said, on the helping with the VVWO on Roadrunner 14, we've put some batteries out there. We're working on a study with EPRI on those to see what we can do for reliability and power quality on a high-penetration feeder. We're also working with the electric vehicles, trying to do the evaluation of the chargers and where those go and what type of chargers we need where, dabbling in all kinds of energy storage, not just batteries, and looking at, like, compressed air storage, looking at potential energy vault type of thing, which is kind of like a pump hydro but moving large blocks around during the day with cranes. So that's kind of what we do. We have our hands in a little bit of everything, and once we decide that the technology is good technology and we do the proof of it, then we give it to Item to scale it.
Excellent. Thank you.
And this is Scott Borden-Kircher, and Ivan and Mark work for me.
So there you go. So he does all the above.
Great. Okay. So, you know, taking a step back before we get into the questions themselves, we have been focusing on specific trends. There are three trends, as Richie said: electrification of transportation, resilient grid, and then integrating high penetration of renewables. And I had an opportunity to do a really quick scan of the PowerPoint and then the PDF. And I think the intersection with the trends that we are looking at here, like I saw a lot of material related to enabling the resilient grid. Like I saw, statistics related to or goals set related to SAIDI and SAIFI. I also saw the PowerPoint deck was about the DERM system. So when I go through these questions, I'm thinking your responses will be in the context of those two trends, and then if there's anything specific to be said about, how this pertains to electrification of transportation specifically, please feel free to volunteer that detail. So does that sound right, like the sort of high-level characterization of the material you've shared with us and the trends we'll be discussing today?
Sure.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, great. So let's get started. If you could say a little bit about APS's strategy regarding resiliency and grid improvement, and how the projects you've undertaken fit into that strategy?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start off by speaking to the heightened importance that we have placed on sensing technology, especially since we are in a state and in a service territory where there is a lot of DER on our system. So for the past several years, the typical SCADA information that we have tried to acquire in order to feed our analytics, our engineering, and our operations activities mainly consisted of voltage, load and fall currents, and in some cases, depending on the calculations, just VARs, a lot of your traditional type of measurements. What we have learned as a result of another project that we have is that we have begun to place a higher importance on harmonics. And the project that stemmed from was the project that Mark mentioned, which is our Roadrunner 14 feeder, which is a very heavily loaded feeder to begin with, but it also has high DER load as well. And what we initially set out to do was evaluate the capabilities of a single phase capacitor bank controller, in other words, operating each phase on a cap bank individually as opposed to in a gang fashion for voltage and VAR support because of DER causing voltage imbalance. And also, in addition to that, the simultaneous coordination and operation of those cap banks with what we call medium-scale energy storage units, where we have three energy storage units placed along the feeder. We have one at the source, one in relatively in the middle, and one closer to the end of the line. And that's where that VOLVAR watt optimization algorithm came into play that Mark also mentioned, as we were partnering with Schneider Electric, our ADMS vendor, to enhance that automation to see if that can be scaled. And what we discovered as part of that effort is that not only do we have voltage and VAR imbalance, we also have a high degree of harmonic distortion, or total harmonic distortion, And the triggers for that are high DER as well as nonlinear loads from the customer sites on this feeder. So my team, you know, looked at the market and we determined that in order to not only detect these adverse conditions that high harmonic distortion readings are causing on the grid and being able to react to them, but we also know that that's going to play a larger space in the DERMS arena. So we have begun the process of getting ready to demonstrate new fiber optic sensors that are going to be paired with a variety of our other apparatus equipment so that we can sense voltage, VARs, load and fall current, as well as harmonic data in one single sensor. And the harmonic data is up to the 250th harmonic, theoretically anyway, once some additional software updates come into play. And that'll feed our future FLISR automation. It will feed our VVO and VVWO automation. It'll help feed data into our eventual DERM system. And it's also driving the requirements for our next generation field area network, which we're at least right now describing as an integrated energy network for all of our future automation needs and eventually our future grid edge computing needs, which we can elaborate on if you would like us to do so as well. And that Roadrunner 14 project was just one of the projects. What we also have year over year are what we call the Reliability and Power Quality Technology Programs, which consist of us modernizing our power quality and reliability technology as it pertains to field equipment. So this is capacitor banks, voltage regulators, load tap changers, overhead reclosers, underground switching cabinets, fault indication devices, and plus a few new ones that will probably be coming down the pike in subsequent years as well. Well, that's at a high level. I'm happy to answer any questions if you'd like some more detail.
This is great. Not being an engineer, I'm a quantitative person, but not being an engineer, I'm quite sure we are going to be going back to the recording to fill in all of the great detail that you gave, actually. So that's good. You know, as you've begun this process and are undertaking these changes, how would you characterize the challenges and opportunities that you've encountered, you know, either posed by this emerging distributed electric system or even the upgrades that you said, you know, for your reliability and power quality programs that you're all of the upgrades that you're making?
So the opportunities, for lack of a better phrase, will consist of more precise automation when it comes to the eventual autonomous algorithms that we are looking to turn on in our ADMS system over the next many years. To feed that, we're going to get more precise data visibility, which not only helps our operations organization, but it's also going to help our engineering organization, and particularly in the distribution planning arena. We are making some moves to incorporate live SCADA data into real-time engineering model analysis and studies tools that we have here at APS, because one of the challenges that we have is that the prior engineering rules of thumb, which, you know, I'm using air quotes over here on the other side of the phone, don't really hold true anymore. So, for example, one of our guiding engineering principles was to put 1.2 megavar of reactive power capability, typically in the form of cap banks, for every 2 megawatts of load, and that held true for many, many decades. Now, with all the solar on the system, that is just no longer true, and now we have to figure out what the new rules look like, and that's not something that we can, you know, have a hunch about anymore. Hence why we are trying to, from an end-to-end perspective, increase the precision and data quality of what we're capturing in the field with our SCADA systems and feeding that not only in our operation systems but into our engineering planning tools.
In those tools, so when we talk about DERMS, you know, everybody has, you know, my joke that I like to say is you ask 10 utilities, you get 15 definitions of DIRMS, right? So ours is basically the DIRMS is the big D. It's the system of systems. So within our DIRMS, you basically have those planning tools, real-time planning tools for our operations folks, for our engineering folks, for power quality, for power reliability, and then you have your ADMS within there. You eventually will have a market system within there because we envision having these DIRs participate in our actual market. You've also got to have, basically all of the data analytics tools need to be part of your DIRMs as well to make good decisions about how you're going to control the DIRMs either aggregated or on an individual basis. So this is all playing together as part of what we're looking at its future for our DIRM solution here at APS.
Great. I'm just typing all of this as you speak. Were there any choices? If you can speak a little bit about choices and, the options you have for engaging with this trend. So, undertaking actions for a more resilient grid. If you can provide some detail about what you prioritized in terms of the path you chose versus alternatives, any details with respect to specific decisions. Some context for this would be, if APS is further ahead on the curve, like Richie started out by saying, this is going to be like best practice sharing. And if there are key decision points along the way that APS made, that, in retrospect, with the benefit of this information, you could, by sharing this, another utility would see that and sort of stand on the shoulders, so to speak. It would be helpful. So, if you could speak a little bit about any key decision points along the way you made and, the alternatives you chose over some other, whether it's with respect to a technology or a partner or a particular approach, at a high level. Yeah, that would be great.
Sure. I can speak to the approach. So initially when we began the smart grid journey, we had several independent smart grid systems that were largely FLISR or VVO oriented. So we had and we still do at APS because they're still alive. We haven't taken them down yet, but we'll eventually. We have two separate independent FLISR technologies that operate FLISR here in Metro, and one other system operates FLISR up in our Flagstaff customer area. We also have a standalone VoltVAR optimization tool, which is an Eaton Cooper tool called UConn VoltVAR Management, and their term for VoltVAR optimization is actually integrated VoltVAR control or multi-VoltVAR control, but all three of those things do the same thing, which is they do the coordinated operation of either reliability or power quality operations in a holistic, looking at a whole feeder and in a tightly coordinated fashion depending on what your objectives are with those technologies. What we learned by having those independent systems is that if you ever overlap the reliability and power quality technologies as they exist in those independent systems on the same feeder, we're going to cause a lot of problems. And the reason that we're going to cause a lot of problems is because, take the FLISR systems, for example, once they execute their FLISR operations, they will not be able to recover the power quality aspect once those operations execute and vice versa. So this was actually one of the main reasons that APS decided to go down the path of getting our own ADMS system, because in our ADMS system, you can do what is called algorithmic stacking on a per-feeder basis. In other words, if you have a feeder that needs both FLISR and VVO, you can configure and tune the execution of those algorithms in such a way that when you have a FLISR operation that completes, you immediately have the power quality operations that immediately follow it in order to keep power nice and stable and flowing for our customers. Whereas with the independent systems, even with integrations,
that was very, very difficult to achieve. And that has also led to other similar approaches, such as in the derm space, which Mark can speak to.
Yeah, so with the derm space, you know, like I said, ADMS and the VDO, VDWO, the thing I think that too many people are trying to do in the derm space that I've seen as we've been out benchmarking mm-hmm. is they're trying to eat the whole elephant in one bite. They're trying to go all the way to market participation with the DERS day one go live. That's not going to be our approach. Our approach is also not to replace all of the current systems we have that are already the tools that our operators and our engineers are using. So a lot of people think they go out and they get a DERM, they have to replace everything they're currently using instead of integrating it all together with a DER control system that does aggregation or independent control. So I think the journey is going to be a little easier for us with the approach that most of your DERMs is already in place. Now you just integrate it to a single pane of glass with whatever the DER solution part of your DERMS is. I think one of the big challenges we're going to have with our DERMS is going to be the data. So the data that we have in the field has to be very accurate for your model to be usable real-time in a DERM situation. I think we're going to have a lot of work to do on the data quality and the type of data that we're getting, in particular from our meters that are out in the field. And I think data conversion that we're going to need and our GIS is going to be very important to be very accurate. I think that's going to be probably our biggest lift, to be honest, in putting in the DERMS in order to have those tools with the most accurate data that we can have. That's something we're going to have to probably start right now for a go-live in 2022 with the DERM solution. So definitely going to be a challenge there.
Hey, Gomathi, could I just butt in real quick?
What was that? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to cut in. I think Gomathi might be typing.
Okay.
And Mark, that was you speaking, right?
Yes.
It's very interesting, and like the challenges seem very focused around the data and around the engineering components of it. And I wonder if through either your or Ivan's team is the customer side of it and the customer communication side of it. Maybe that group might not be present on this call, but are you guys able to speak to what are the challenges you might be focusing on? Let's say you get the technology right and that's coming and we get the data quality pretty good too. Are there any challenges from the consumer side that you guys are anticipating, either within your teams?
With our internal consumers, are you talking about our APS stakeholders, you mean?
Yeah, I would say all of your – really, that would be a broad question across the board. I mean, there could be certainly different the DR owners or internally as well within your own groups internally with the data collection process. So it might have been twofold, but which one kind of matters more to you guys?
So I think, the external – DER operators, owners, the ones that we have control over, we already have agreements with them that we have the controls over those. So I think that's going to be the easier part. The harder part is always getting buy-on from various stakeholders within the organization. So we've actually embarked on an activity this year where we have brought all the stakeholders together in workshops. We've had a consultant running the workshops of what does DERMS mean to you and what do you need from this in order to better operate, better design, keep more reliable, power quality, all those things. So we're involving all the engineer groups and the end users, including IT, brought them in the room and got all their questions answered, got all of their use cases down. And then when we've been going out on the benchmarking trips and the trips to see vendors, we're bringing those key stakeholders, a representative from each of those groups, on the trips with us so they can get their questions asked and have the input. Because really all we're doing is we're herding the cats to decide what the DERM solution needs to be based on what the use cases are from our end users that are internal. Those workshops consisted, there was 28 different groups represented in those workshops, and we continue to keep them informed and help them make the right decision based on what their needs are. So that part of it's been really pretty easy. If you invite them to your problem and you are giving them free help to solve their problem, they're very willing to participate. I bet.
Wait, is that, Mark, is that 28 internal stakeholder groups?
That's correct.
Wow.
Yes.
That's incredible. Gomathi, are you back on? I believe you might have dropped.
I am. I did, and I have no idea what happened, but I tried another phone, and, yeah, it was exactly around the 1:30 or 1:32. I came back in with the buy-in from stakeholders part. So, yeah, I've got that, and I'm glad we have the recording. Thanks, Richie.
Yeah. And really, Mark and everyone, just to kind of really sum up quickly the last 3 minutes then, it was we were just kind of Gomathi, you might have just dropped as – we were talking about APS's approach is really about, you know, the derm is the system, and that's the most important part, not trying to bite off the whole thing, but let's get the system in place, and then all the DERs are kind of already in there, or they're going to be coming because of market factors, and it's really the system that matters most, and over time, technology will be implemented, but if the system's right, you're in a good place. And so the biggest challenge is a robust system means, you know, there's a lot of data accuracy challenges or data quality or really just converting the data into useful information because you have it all is going to be probably the three biggest challenges once you have this robust system in place, which it sounds like is on its way in the next few years of being completed. And so that's kind of where we got to. I asked the question about, you know, what kind of challenges do you have from a customer or consumer standpoint, and it's pretty interesting, guys, that we've had those conversations about kind of reliability and stakeholders in air quotes, if you will. And a lot of utilities have talked about external stakeholders and what it's like to bring in the clean energy groups and consumer groups and how do we get everybody on board to, you know, say that the grid is important and the utility needs more visibility and needs some of these different things that, you know, different utilities on the East Coast or in PJM are asking for. And so it's interesting. Gomathi, they said that, you know, internally it's really important because there's all this information and there's all these ways to help internal clients at APS. And so I appreciate you guys bringing that up, Mark, because that's something we haven't really heard of. You know, how do you get this is a transformation of utilities. You know, how do you get everybody internally on board, not just externally?
And right, so we can put in whatever system we want in place. If we don't have a change management in the end user, what's the use, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm going to put a tool out there that nobody's going to buy in, nobody's going to use. They're going to fall back to their old ways. So I don't care how much I modernize everything. If the people haven't changed, we haven't changed, and nothing's better. So Ivan and I are very focused on that. We have monthly meetings with our stakeholders from, I mean, IT, operations, engineering, everybody. What do we have? 30 groups in that meeting.
Yeah.
So we bring
roughly 30 plus departments.
Yeah.
Average around 30.
And we bring all of those leaders in once a month, and we feed them, and we say, here's what's coming from TA, here's what's coming from AGT, what are your concerns that you have about what we're doing, what do you need us to do different, give us all your feedback, because we can't fix it if we don't know it's broke. And those meetings have been very, very productive for us, and that's helped get our buy-in on the DERMS thing, because they're already used to us reaching out to them and having these key stakeholder meetings with them. You know, and that's what we always tell them. Ivan and I are like, we are free help for you. If you need us to do an evaluation, if you need us to help solve a grid problem, we don't cost you anything. We're paid for. So come take advantage of us. And I think that's going to help us be successful in the long term for sure. And I think it's an important piece of this. I see too often where, you know, especially in IT is very guilty of it. That's where I come from. They go out and find the solution for the business and tell the business this is your solution and then walk away and say have fun. They never involve the business in really getting to what the business problem is and what the available solutions are for the business problem. It's best for the business, for the end user. And that's something we want to steer very clear of with this.
That's great. Yeah, you know, when we speak with this energy transition, I think the sort of culture change, like you said, that has to accompany the you know, all the other modernization efforts that are happening, and stakeholder engagement is a key part. Do you have, or these various departments, or at a higher level, you know, set metrics for how you will define success for your projects, and what metrics do you track and how with respect to these efforts?
depends on the project. So each project is unique to what does success look like. But definitely success metrics are definitely part of what I do because we're implementing technology that's known but new to APS. So we absolutely have to have that success criteria based on what we're doing. Like, you know, the dynamic line rating devices that we've put a few out in the field, and we definitely have a success metrics around what does success mean with this device? What are we looking for it to do? What business problem is it trying to solve? And then does it meet those things? Because until I scale it, I need to have those questions answered. So I know I do.
Mark took the words right out of my mouth. I agree. It depends on the project. Each project has success metrics tied to it. And then once we execute the project and evaluate the technology, depending on what stage of its maturity it's in, so if it's something brand new, it's going to look very different than, say, something that has been deemed a technology to scale and mature. But we still track and trend the benefits because we want to make sure we're still making the right investments for our customers.
But the question that it always starts with, and this is what I do when we do our technology evaluation program here that's ran under my team, is I tell my team the first question they need to answer when somebody comes to them with a new toy is, what problem are you trying to solve?
Yeah.
You need to be solving a problem. This can't just be, oh, this thing's cool and I want it.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
What have some of these, you know, various innovations that you have brought in, any pilots, what have some of the surprises been for any, if you can instantiate any that surpassed your expectations or the market actors or partners or your team? Anything you learned, anything that surprised you?
So from a technical perspective, I'll go back to that total harmonic distortion situation that we uncovered on Roadrunner 14 that we do expect to encounter on other feeders once we have the technology there to sense that aspect of the problem.
That was unintended.
Yeah. The other thing, I mean, I know that we've been circling on this for a little bit, but I think it's really important that, so along the lines of here, what Mark mentioned about getting the people on board and making sure we have the proper change management in place, that end-to-end perspective that I detailed earlier where you have control systems, networks, and then your field equipment, that's not just a technical approach that we're taking here at APS. It's also a people approach. Because the cultural transformation that we're trying to, you know, be champions for here, involve that much, you know, higher degree of collaboration and integration when it comes to solving the issues and problems that we're experiencing on our grid. So that Roadrunner 14, issue that we discovered, that was a collaboration between our distribution O&M field crews, our distribution operations center, my team, Mark's team, our distribution operations engineering group, our distribution planning and engineering group, and that even brought in our transmission operations folks because that has transmission impact on a large scale basis as well. So we discovered a problem, brought in everyone who should have a say into it as well as more just to make sure that we were checking off the right boxes and not leaving anybody out to shed some light on this issue. And we collectively, you know, arrived at, okay, we need a new type of sensor here. And that's why we're moving toward that fiber optic sensor that we're looking to demonstrate.
Yep. No. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Gomathi, real quick, my question there is, so as we, in some cases, we are going to be kind of highlighting overall large trends, right? And in some cases, we're going to highlight, you know, kind of overarching initiatives. We might get into that with APS, and it sounds like there are opportunities for that. But would you guys agree that, you know, a flagship, if we were going to talk about some of the things you've learned in 2019 or recently that you're proud of, or if we were to highlight that Roadrunner 14 and not just the work itself, but like your point, Ivan, the process and how you got the stakeholders in there, if there was a follow-up call or if there was a follow-up on that, to highlight that, is that something that you guys would want to highlight at a more national level? Is that something that, you know, has a lot of success internally from you guys?
Well, we're not complete on it yet, unfortunately. This study, actually, of Roadrunner 14 is being done with EPWI as our partner on it. And we're still waiting on the final piece of this for the report, but we have the batteries sitting in an idle state right now in Roadrunner 14. And until we can get the batteries back operational, we can't complete the research out there.
Right. Understood.
I think that definitely would be a good story to, you know, set out there. It comes back to the visibility and the data again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We probably had that problem on that feeder forever, and we didn't realize until we got the sensors out there as part of this project.
Yeah. Great. I don't want to lead anything here. I was just asking there, but we'll certainly reach back out. You know, this report will be coming out in probably about the next 2 months or early February, so you know, as we start to talk more about our members and utilities, we'll make sure that, you know, we're in touch to make sure those messages are still in alignment.
Okay. That's great. What you just said was a quotable quote. We probably had this problem forever, but once we had the data, we were able to actually take action on it. Yeah, because data-driven strategies, whether it's on the operation side or behind the meter, that is the visibility that you want.
Yes.
What are we're coming close to the end? We have around 30 more minutes. What are the three important things you think other utilities should know? And we touched a little bit on this earlier when we talked about, you know, providing a little bit more detail for those who might come behind. But what should they know or do before they engage in these grid modernization efforts like APS has, or, you know, improving the resiliency and so on?
So I think, you know, one thing, and I'm going to harp on it just because it's a big pet peeve of mine, is utilities tend to operate in silos a lot. I think you need to break down the silos so that you can embark on these transformation of really of the utility. It's got to start with the people. I'm 100% convinced of that is the biggest thing in my book is breaking down the silos and work as one team. Scott Spotts has a thing where if you say the word they, she will absolutely jump on you. Because she says, who's this they? Because I always hear this they thing. It's one team, regardless of who we work for. Regardless if you're in IT, operations, engineering, it's one APS. And I think far too often people lose sight of that, and we can't transform unless it's one team. That's my biggest thing.
And I agree with that. I think that's the most important aspect, because if that aspect is not focused on, the other stuff is not going to play out well.
Great.
And to add on to this, so I agree with Mark's first statement, that's the number one thing. In my opinion, the second thing would be for all of the technical organizations in a utility, which consists of largely, you know, your engineering and your IT, OT organizations, they really need to place a focus not on integration, like a lot of utilities typically do, but really the interoperability of the technologies that they have. In other words, when they're looking to build a system, or in Mark's case with Durham's, a system of systems, how well have the components been engineered, designed, configured to operate to their maximum capacity with the other components of the system? Sometimes we in the utility industry tend to focus just through a single facet or a single lens of a piece of technology, and we don't look at the other pieces that it offers. So, for example, one of the things that we're struggling with at APS that we are looking to fix next year is our communications network, because our RF communications network is largely serial-based. So the most I can do is just get SCADA functionality out of it, you know, to acquire the data, or send some control instructions to it, which, don't get me wrong, is a big part of the battle. The mm-hmm. part that we didn't look at for a really, really long time that we began to focus on using that interoperability theme is, okay, I have SCADA to my fleet of devices, but how do I change settings easily, in other words, over the air, or update firmware? Like, I met with one of our vendor partners today, and he commented to me how APS is several versions behind on a certain piece of equipment, and what's driven that within APS is that we need to keep the firmware consistent so that the settings are consistent across the fleet. Now, once we mm-hmm. have the ability to upgrade firmware and take advantage of capabilities that we're not taking advantage of today, that's going to increase our operational efficiency. That's going to make the grid more resilient. It's going to feed more mm-hmm. data to our engineers, and it's going to make the utility's ability to keep power flowing reliably and simply for our customers much, much easier and much more efficient.
Great. Thank you. That's great. And as I look at these two themes, I think, you know, the overarching theme is, you know, got to break down silos so that people are working together as one team. And then the second theme is so that the technologies are working together in a seamless way, right? It's about interoperability. So there's that overarching theme across those two. Anything else on, you know, lessons from APS's experience that other utilities should know or do apart from these two?
So one thing I think is important that we lose sight of sometimes when we're doing things that are in the grid is involving our security team early and often.
Mm.
We need to make sure that as we put more intelligence out on the grid, that we're doing it as securely as possible, especially in today's world. And I think too often we don't involve security early enough. I know we're changing that here, but I know other utilities probably don't involve their cybersecurity team and physical security team as soon as they should in their projects.
That's great. This is definitely important. All right. So I think that, you know, so we focused a lot on the resilient grid. You know, are there, is there anything you'd like to share on how you're reacting to or leading on electrification of transportation? So we spoke about the resilient grid and DERMS, which is how you would integrate high penetration of renewables. So, yeah, if you'd like to add any comments specifically on how APS is responding to or leading on transportation electrification, welcome back.
A different group in our company focuses on the EV adaptation and electrification. It's our customer technology group. My team does the evaluations, for example. We're trying to put a stake in the ground right now for charging stations so that we can get a rate tariff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're putting some level two and level three chargers out in the field, and we're basically giving them to the businesses,
mm-hmm.
kind of strategically placed. So the level two chargers are easy to place, and they're not that expensive. They're a few grand. When you get to the level three supercharges, the prices on those are just absolutely astronomical compared to a level
mm-hmm.
two. And we can't get anybody to take them. We literally can't give them away because of the increased energy costs to the business.
Yeah.
So that's where we're having a little bit of a struggle there. So we're trying to get a stake in the ground with electrical vehicle charging stations, but it's kind of a challenge. And there's
mm-hmm.
no rate tariff for them right now in Arizona so that the utility can monetize it.
Right. So to clarify, there is no special EV rate for your business or residential customers. Is that what you meant?
So basically, there is no tariff that APS has to where we could actually charge the consumer at the charger. So we have to go through third party, like Electrify America. And the challenges that our customers that wanting the level three is we have a demand rate. And if that
mm-hmm.
charger is being used during the demand rate, there were some estimates that bill would go from 800 a month to almost, you know, 10,000 a month if they weren't properly managing those level three chargers.
I can see why businesses would be wary of incurring those charges. Okay. I think that brings us. This is great. I think that brings us to almost the end. Are there any other trends you're experiencing? Anything else that we have not discussed that you think should be included in this report, should be on the radar of the readership for this report? And Richie, maybe you can instantiate with, we're talking about transportation, resilient grid, renewables, anything outside of these three that you think are adjacent to or related that we haven't covered specifically?
I don't think so either, Gomathi. This has been extremely valuable and helpful to us. If there are any other questions about the logistics or about the kind of the inner workings of the index itself, I'd be happy to take those now or, anytime in the coming weeks or months. But, we're doing these kind of calls with a lot of our members and a few of our non-members. And then we're also going to be working with EPRI and some of our other non-utility members as well, just to kind of round out some of the other forces that we're seeing that are being enacted on some of these trends. We're trying to get this very broad understanding of, what does it mean on the grid? The GMI data would not have told us that the importance of people and the importance of making sure that, within a transition or a transformation, the departments internally matter just as much, if not more, than the technology itself. And so that's what we're trying to tell and use the GMI this year on. We'll go back to data and we'll try to get these questions, revised a little bit next year to make sure that we are able to capture some of these really important stories from a quantitative level as well. But this year we're really doing more of an anecdotal story approach. And so this is extremely helpful. So, I think what we've done is at the end, if there's things we did, you meant, or if you're looking at your notes and there's a few things we didn't get to, feel free to shoot us a note, or we'll be in touch over the next few months as we prepare this report.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much
for your
time.
Thank you guys. Happy Thanksgiving, and have a great holiday.
Thank you. Same
to you.
Well.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye all.
Bye.
Bye. See you guys.